goes high towards the play there. Walsh got there ahead of him though. Moncur plays it back in again. And no one's back.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Washbag Podcast. I'm Ron Smith. It's been a really interesting time for Swindon Town with a couple of really good games over at Wolverhampton and yesterday against Bristol City, the 3-2 victory. Here to talk about the recent games is Brendan Hobbs. Welcome, Brendan.
Hello.
And also joined by Matt Kilford, returned to the podcast. You haven't been on it for some
time.
No, and I should say for Brendan, you last joined me for our chat with Fraser Digby.
Earlier
this year.
The playoff celebration. Yeah, that was quite good. So that time I did another one.
I can't compete with Fraser, can I?
No. Well, anyway, we sort of got lots to reflect on after yesterday's game with Bristol City. Just about scraped through with the victory in the end. I mean, Matt, sort of your views really on the game, but more so about the sort of first half. And
yeah, I mean, I wanted to really briefly start because the game changed completely differently for me going to the game yesterday because I used my World card for the first time.
Did you?
So I'm not a season ticket holder because I...
Did it work?
What?
Were you going up to the turnstile and sort of... You're shaking. Am I going to get in?
I went up when I bought the ticket. What's the terminology they use when you put it to the card? You don't collect it in person. You can access to card. I think it's called the option.
So
I did
online,
that.
Went
in. Poor old guy, about 80 years old, I think, behind the turnstile. Didn't work. He said, "Where's your barcode on your email confirmation?" It wasn't there. So I went back to the club shop. Really good guy in there, a young guy with glasses, can't remember his name, it might be Jason, and he basically changed it over, took me in, and it worked. So I think I was the first person to use the My World card.
Very good. What, first person?
I think he said I was the first person because obviously everyone else's wasn't working, so I was the only person to go in and say, put it on my card, rather than just say, give me a ticket.
Gosh.
So that was good.
So first of all, you managed to actually get into the
ground. I got into the ground. What I loved about it, it took me back to when... the Bristol City Swindon games were when I was a kid. That feeling in your stomach that you just don't know which way it's going to go. With Mason out and Pritchard not available, Harley not being able to come in, Burnie's been effective on the right, even though we've done okay with that in the last couple of games, arguably. I kind of feared the worst because I know City are a good side. You know, they're just on a bad run, and they've got some good players, and it proved to be they played better. They nullified Kasim and the way we played, and we had to play differently, and we came out on top, which kind of surprised me. And they surprised me in a nice way that they can win in a different style, like Mark Cooper said.
Well, I mean, you know, City came out. I mean, it's obvious that they had prepared, unlike some of the teams we have played recently. Prepared to play Swindon. They played three at the back. They knew how to, as you said, pressure on Kasim throughout the game, even though he still actually did manage to have a good game and still sort of popped up in all sorts of positions. Brendan, what was your... did it bring back memories, as Matt said, in terms of the old games? I mean,
it was quite an open game. I don't think we kind of knew which way it was going to go from the off. There was added pressure for me because I work in Bristol and part of some of the people that I work with
Bristol
City fans. The guy that sits opposite me is a Bristol Rovers fan, so there's been lots of mutual anti-City fist bumping throughout the week to try and build ourselves up, because I feel a bit more of an affinity with him because he's sort of down there, and you know, and Bristol City have always had that sort of edge of a superior edge to them. I suppose they always have that feeling that they're a little bit superior to us. I wasn't looking forward to the game at all. I know there was lots of people tweeting and stuff saying, oh, this is going to be it, I can't wait, counting the days away. But because of that, and because of the hard time I was getting all week, I felt really under pressure. I felt like I was in that tunnel, really nervous before coming out.
That's so true. I mean, I never go to games feeling like that. I just always go looking forward to every single game.
Because I've been ribbed all week, and I kind of, as I was saying to the Bristol Rovers guy opposite me, I really wanted them to win in the week. to get that one win out of the way, because it was 16 games, I think, without a win.
Yeah, all the way back till March, I think it is, yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter how bad you are. And as Matt said, you look at their team sheet.
Individually.
Yeah. I mean, there's
so many good players
there. So many good players there, you know, and there's Shorey, and there's that Emmanuel Thomas, who we know is a good player.
Jet.
He's great, but he does drift out of games quite a bit. But when he's actually interested.
Yeah, he was quite a beast, wasn't he? And Pack and all those sort of players. And,
yeah, you know, Pack, of course, could have been playing for Swindon earlier this year. Mm.
Yeah, and he... and so you look at that, and I was thinking, well, it doesn't matter how bad you are, you're going to win eventually. Mm. And you could... I did predict as I left on Friday a 1-0 City win, Aidan Flint, 93rd minute. Mm. Mm. And, you know, and everyone was like... laughing about that, but you know, I was given grief, so I went into this really feeling it, really nervous. And I think when I got there, and you know, the atmosphere was really quite good, and I think it was really good seeing the County Ground looking so good as well. Mm. With, you know, the bar was open in the town end, obviously in the town end, but they had the new big screen, you had those seats filled in, and the arcades, and that's always just really angered me. This is that concrete
empty section. Yeah.
There was a moment as well when, because I've been going to football with my dad since he started taking me in the early 80s. For the last 20 years, I've been complaining about the PA system.
Mm. So I couldn't complain about it.
There was this magical moment on my dad's face lit up in pure amazement that I stopped him in mid-set. I said, "Have you noticed something different?" And then he said, "Hang on." And he realised he couldn't hear what he was saying properly because the clarity from the PA system was coming through. Yeah, and his eyes lit up like a 3-year-old boy being given chocolate. It was amazing. I can't believe it. They finally
it was
it.
So loud just today. We couldn't talk in the office.
No, but I'd rather that. But then I realised that they hadn't replaced the PA system. What they'd done is they brought in monitors.
Yeah,
down
yeah, the floor,
which
that.
A lot of clubs they, do, they, and I think they should do that.
Well, they've done that a lot of times before, but they never seem to have that effect. No, but the one thing I did find before the start of the game, though, it was so loud, did kind of restrict the atmosphere. You couldn't hear the town.
Well, it changed it up, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's not what we're used to. I mean, what I really annoyed me is that they did a remembrance for Jimmy Davis. Mm-hmm. And it's applause, I think it was, a few weeks back. And not many people knew what they were applauding for.
No.
Yeah.
And I thought that was it. I thought, I think I sent something to the chairman on Twitter because he's up there. I think from then on, so I'm glad they've done something about it. And I think they should sort it out because I think it's so important. Drifting from the football slightly, but I think that does really make a difference to the how.
No, it's always been said, isn't it, that they should sort of invest in that. Yeah. I mean, because sort of going back to the game, I mean, what you're saying, Brendan, about sort of being nervous, I mean, you know, that early goal from Flint, it wasn't a shock in a way because I kind of. Because they had the corner come over.
Fodringham, watching it this morning, it was, Fodringham could have caught that.
He could have done, and he was complaining that Flint had leant over him, restricted him up and shot, but no way.
I think
no way at all.
Watching that, you'd think, I probably could have done better.
He definitely could have done.
I think live, I thought he'd come and, I thought Wes had come off his line and actually missed it. Mm. You know, in that sort of blink, sort of quick second, I thought that's what happened. But again, watching
he
it,
did, he
last
sort of jumped,
night,
but didn't bring his hand.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, he didn't release. But he was complaining. He was restricted, but he wasn't. I mean, he knows Flynn. He's been with him for the past couple of years, he should have read him a bit more. But then that kind of highlights the problem that Town have had from corners in recent sort of times against Gillingham as well and other games.
And subsequent corners as well from that Flint goal. There was a couple of other corners where you just thought, well, one, I think the first time it dapped was inside the 6-yard box with no one. It was, and I just think then it was a little bit.
And then there was the infamous Wes with the miscontrolling that led to the corner.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, that was later on in the first half, wasn't it?
So we are given. J-Mac was the same, where he's given away a couple of fouls in quite decent areas. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You have to kind of... We could talk about the negative, but the positives were that we still managed to attack and look like scoring, you know, 4 or 5 probably throughout the game still, without Mason, without Pritchard, without Byrne doing a good job, and without Harley. I just think that's a really, really good sign.
I mean, we're fortunate that, you know, towards the end of the transfer window, we've got Nicky Jose come in, and Gesson as well. I mean, and Gesson yesterday was...
He was
fantastic. He had... going back to it, I mean, in terms of looking at the game anyway, I mean, Jose had their quick throw, came in.
Yeah.
He just continued his run and then just lost that goal in for the equaliser.
Yeah, the guy, I think someone said that the defender lost his foot in, but that was only because of the great turn that he did within his feet, and then just whacked it across goal, and it was a great finish. I know he missed a goal, sort of missed a chance later on, and he should have really put that away.
He played through, wasn't he?
You know that one that so many strikers do, they just sort of look to place it and end up putting it just straight at the keeper, and the keeper sort of...
He couldn't have had an easier save, could he, that one, that time?
That was the move of the match, though, for that.
But he will score goals, and you look back at his history, Jose, and he scored loads of goals. I think it was, was it for, not Burnley... No, it wouldn't have been Burnley. Hang on. Bury.
Bury on loan last year, yeah.
Shed loads of goals for them over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Took a couple of loan spells. He's going to be great. Mm-hmm. Them and Nguessian, just really, really good.
I mean, I'm guessing shortly after Town got that first equaliser, he had that rasping shot from about sort of 25, 30 yards,
deserved a goal. I think the crossbar still shaking
that, it did hit the bar, didn't it?
Absolutely hammered it.
That's a Vic Morgan phrase, rattled.
But, I mean, that was just such a great shot. And he had a similar one at Wolves as well, which went just over. But it's always good just to see those, when they are taking those long-range shots, they do rarely go in, but to get them close or to test in the keeper, it just really keeps the opposition on their toes quite a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, throughout that sort of... Disappointing thing for me, as the second half went on, was that Town did allow City just to have those spells of possession, and they did become equally dominant, as were Town in those stages. Town were better after they got that first goal. They had a good sort of 5-10 minutes, and then they just seemed to forget the pass. You know, the sort of the passing moves that they're trying to be playing. And City got into a bit more.
Yeah, they pushed up so far. So what they did really well was that they pushed up on the strikers. They put a guy in Kassim, so that stopped the ball out. So Fodrum had to kick. What was interesting is when Luongo came forward for the ball as well, it left a massive, the whole sort of centre circle was completely free. Mm. And then Wes was knocking it so long that it was Ranger and Flint. Flint won 9 out of 10 times. Yeah. Ranger did okay, you know. But there was enough space to actually knock it over and get it to Ranger's feet. Yeah. It was kind of that much space. But
I kept seeing, sort of sitting in the arcles behind, sort of Cooper up a bit higher, and I kept seeing him throughout the entire game really having to go at Fodringham for his distribution. Mm. And as you said, I mean, it kind of didn't help. But it was very different how they played recently. It was all the time a ball out to the back four to Kassim and to play up. But it was
I don't
different.
Think Wes could have done that much more than he did. But it was, like I said, it was still nice to see that although Kassim wasn't as influential, when he got the ball, he did things right. Mm-hmm. And Luongo, probably he drifted out more so than any other game I've seen him, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be because Mason can play that more forward role better.
Yeah.
Whereas Luongo then can pick up and come deeper into the move. But the second goal, the way that he just did this little movement with his body and this little shimmy to get away from the first defender, then he has this brilliant capacity just to be able to get past someone with a... He does, you remember like McCormack did last year, you can just get it and then he takes a couple of strides and all of a sudden he's 30 yards up the pitch, three players taken out. Luongo does that with a lot more finesse.
Yeah, I mean, Luongo did that, you know, there were about sort of three or four City defenders, wasn't there? And he went round over to the left-hand side and just crossed it in. It was fortunate that Jose was there at the end and he just sort of just managed to get a foot to it.
I looked straight at the linesman then, as soon as he put it across, I thought, oh, here we go, and I looked straight at the linesman. And which kind of delayed the celebrations a bit, because I thought, because the way he ghosted in to nick the ball from Flint, who was then by that time sat on his backside, which there was a great photo going around Twitter last night of that goal. And he dropped, he just ghosted in and took the ball in, and I immediately thought, oh, wow, that's offside, really. Mm. But luckily.
So did he. I remember looking on the highlights, he had a good look around himself.
Oh, he
just to double check. But
again, he's Johnny on the spot for the goal, which is, I think, his performance entirely. I mean, every time he had the ball, he looked like he was going to do something, but he didn't seem to have the ball that often. If you compare that to Nguessian and Ranger, he didn't seem to have the ball as often as those, but when he did look dangerous. And I think because of the shape and the way we played, and as Matt was saying then, that compared to all the other games I've seen, every time we had a set piece or a throw-in or a free kick in our own half, Bristol City man-marked, totally man-marked our midfield. Yeah. They couldn't even move a few yards without someone treading on their ankles and so forth. Mm. And it was quite strange to watch. And so they'd obviously decided to make sure that's not the case.
Yeah. I think the only thing that we can say is a positive is not every manager is going to think that same way, because there's going to be other managers who are going to come to us and say, oh, we can outplay them. They're going to have different egos, different mentalities. Mm-hmm. So they're not all going to play that. You will get a lot of sides, and we have to come overcome that. So that's what makes it good that we can still win games like that. But I still think there'll be different games throughout the year. Like Tuesday night, I know I would say we're going to get to play more football than we normally would, because the way that Chelsea play, and in Premier League in general, you tend to get a bit more time to pass the ball around until the final third. So,
well, in the same way as that, when Swindon and Cooper go elsewhere, we don't necessarily change how we play ourselves. Mm. We go there on that way to go and try and play, because we can play better football than them and win the game, hopefully.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work at Wolves, but...
No, but I've never seen, I think in my lifetime, I can't remember a defeat ever being talked about so much in a positive fashion.
Mm. Yeah.
It was only, but I wasn't there. I know, I listened to the commentary, but it was
truly the most confusing game to watch, because we could have got so many goals.
Mm.
The possession, the passing, we had just the intricate play, but then every time Wolves got the ball and went down the other end, you thought, okay, they're going to score, because they've just got some good Premier League quality championship strikers who just got that accurate finishing.
Yeah,
and it could have ended at 5-4 to either team, to be honest.
And you're right, a lot of those players are now filtering down to League One, and that's what's making yesterday's game. You know, there was, as you say, Nicky Shorey just being able to be sort of played in left midfield, mm-hmm. and whipping in the crosses. They used him well. A lot more talent in League One, and fortuitously, we've got Niall Ranger who, whacked it in at the end.
Yeah, and I was going to come on to Ranger. I mean, his contribution to Swindon is getting more pronounced and more important all the time. He's just performing. He's obviously match fit now, and he can. He's holding up the ball yesterday.
Yeah,
was great, and it's just his distribution, how he just linked in the midfield, and also Jose and Nguessen. Mm. But as you say, the goal just got a perfect example of how he can contribute in that, in the box there.
I thought the
ball was came back in at the corner, came out, ball headed back in, I think, by Luongo.
Yeah,
just held up the ball perfectly. Just that quick turn, just where on earth did that ball go? I didn't see it hit.
I'd love to see another angle of that, because he obviously must have hit it to the right of the keeper as it went up into the net, but it's just...
He said in the interview, when we were all surprised that he actually did speak on the radio afterwards, it was like, you never guess what, now Rangers are actually going to talk, they said. And it was like, so they interviewed him, and I thought, he was quite honest when he said that, he got it under control, just turned, and he just said he just smashed it as hard as he possibly could. Yeah. And I think...
But that's all you can do in that position, exactly, where you are sort of 8 to 10 yards from goal.
That's the sign of instinct, I think, rather than someone that would turn and think, right, I need to... This is last few minutes, what do I need to do? I need to place it. He didn't. He just turned and hit it. And I think Aidan Flint had a real hard time with him, but dealt with him really well. Mm. And I'm sure we're talking about Aidan later on, but I think he it showed why he was such a good player, and also why some of us weren't that bothered that he went. He won everything in the air. But when a Ranger got the ball down and actually brought the ball down, Flint couldn't get it off him.
No.
And he would then just distribute it very simply, left, right, play it back, whatever, and we'll go. Yeah. And that's what half
I know, it's what Ranger does really well compared to, you would take it for granted, is the fact that he puts his foot over the ball. So he's always rolling the ball with his foot, which means he's stopping it from being kicked away. Whereas if you keep it just there, it can be poked away. But because he's got it there, they've got to actually physically hit the ball to get it away, whereas opposed to kind of just sort of muscling off and the ball rolls away. He keeps it under control so well, always with his long legs, keeping it right outstretched, like a boxer's reach sort of thing, away from danger. And it was very, very impressed with him. The most I've impressed with him.
It was quite Wayne Allison-like, because Wayne Allison was very good at that, getting his back into the defender and keeping that, you said, I've never thought of it that way, but he does keep that ball away from them, and that's where... Yeah, he was so effective, and Ranger again was capped it all with that goal.
Yeah,
I mean, would you say? I mean, Jose got man of the match announced at the game in terms of always come up, you know, too soon. Mm. Then Ranger gets the goal. Sort of key players for you, Brendan, yesterday. Would you say it would be Ranger?
I was very impressed with him. And my, you know, I go and sit with my dad, and he's a big fan of Niall Ranger. My dad has his favourites, and you know, he seems to focus on certain people for the people he doesn't like and for the people that he likes. And he does really like Niall Ranger. I think he admires his work ethic around the pitch. Kazim again, he played a different role, but he still bossed it. And it was one of the things I was looking for was obviously Pac on one side and obviously Kazim on the other, who are both in that sort of deep-lying... Not Pat's going to do so much running, but distribute and be the outlet and the creative force of. But I've never seen Kazim run as much as he did in this game. Mm. He seemed to really just be going up and down. He seemed to have adapted his game, and some of the tackles he won, some of the.
Was that just down to the actual sort of restriction on space that City put? Yeah. So he had to find the space. And...
Yeah, but he was belting forward and stuff like that. And, I think Lewis Thompson should get a lot of credit.
I was going to come on to Lewis. I mean, that was his first start of the season yesterday, and it was obviously a big game to throw him into. He's shown himself before that he can sort of step up to the first team football on a regular basis. But because as you said, Matt, in terms of the changes in the town midfield to actually have Thompson in there and how that would then work,
he didn't look out of place.
Did he?
He was tough in the tackle.
Because previously,
he's 18 years old.
I know
we had a 15-year-old kid on the bench.
Primary school next. With Thompson, my worry about him going in there is just his age and just his positional. Or discipline, because he does like those more marauding runs forward, but how he kind of works within them. But you know, yesterday he held his own.
Yeah, he held his own, and I think
as far as I could see.
I think he'll only get better. Going back to a couple of games, there was against Torquay, and I remember Billy Bowden was through on goal. This was the first time I forgot that Billy Bowden was actually playing for Torquay. I thought, it's Billy Bowden. And Billy Bowden was through on goal. And Louis Thompson just like ran, and he made up like an unbelievable amount of metres in seconds and just took the ball off him. And I thought, wow, this kid's got something.
He did a similar thing last year, didn't he?
Did he?
It was in the FA Cup game against Macclesfield.
Okay. Was that when he scored the own goal?
Yeah. Okay. But De Canio said at that time he didn't care because of just his desire just to run that half, you know, length of the pitch just to try and savour it.
Oh, the Swindon fans, we're going to be using the word desire. It's not going to filter out, is it?
It's not, is it? No.
I think the game for me actually changed was a positional change as well. That I don't know whether anyone else saw it. I think it was about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go. I think it was Nathan Thompson went off and he seemed to come back on clutching a bit of paper. And he shouted to a few players, and all of a sudden...
Didn't notice that, no.
Lewis Thompson went into a defensive midfield role, Kazim, Longo, and then Jose slotted in behind Ranger and Guessing went central.
So they made it like a diamond formation.
Almost, that's what it seemed. And it kind of lost it, but that coincided with that kind of build-up of steam
it did. I mean, a lot sooner than that. I mean, City did go four at the back as well. They changed it around themselves.
Yeah.
I hadn't picked up on that. But it's interesting to think now that perhaps that change should have come a bit sooner. But in the end, it worked. So,
I mean, we're
not talking about a tactic that should have been implemented because they come out of it with a win.
Is his name O'Connor? Was it the guy that got on loan for Derby? He pulled up and he pulled a hamstring or something, got stretched off. So I think that was kind of a defining moment. It was about 3-2, I think, or something at that point. And he pulled his ligament or whatever it was at the moment of the pass. That's what threw it. So who would have known what would have happened? They could have gone on and scored from there. So that was kind of a game-changing moment.
And of course, I mean, City, after Rangers scored, they did hit the post themselves.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a mad dash at that end.
I did think when it hit the post,
they would get it. So and it did really... I did think it was going to hit the bar and bounce back in the game. I think we're talking about goal line technology in League One, but thankfully we're not up to that yet.
Yeah, no, it was just the silence. There was this hush when it hit that bar. Because I think everyone could see it happening because the guy...
It goes in slow
miles,
motion, doesn't
it? Yeah, he was miles on his own. And as soon as they passed the ball across, everyone just went, especially me, thinking Monday morning.
Yeah, and then a couple of other crosses over as well where... They're just a bit overhit, and they'll
be all right, City.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I mean, they are 4 points from 8 games. We don't really want to sort of go over our rivals, but I can completely understand where they are because we've been in that ourselves, suffering a relegation. You're just carrying it through. You're not picking up, as we said earlier, a league win since March. It's going to change for sometime soon. They have some quality individuals there. Mm. I mean, how long's O'Driscoll been there?
I don't know.
Was it sort of midway last season
he joined? I think so, yeah. He joined, didn't
he? So he's been there a good time to work.
I think he's brought in most. I think that's most of his squad now. I think, but yeah, getting Emmanuel Thomas was a few moments where he had the better of Hall yesterday. So Hall's an interesting one. My dad is not a fan of Grant Hall. Mm. I think he does more things than good, more things well than bad. But he does seem to let the forwards dominate him quite easily. He can't seem to get his positioning quite right just yet. They can always seem to turn off the left of him, or off the right, or however you want to look at it.
No, it's most on the left.
And that's happened quite a lot. Mm. There's been a few of those goals this season. He's getting better, and he's a better footballer than Flint. Although Flint was doing some nice passes, cross-field passes and stuff yesterday.
He was, but I still wouldn't have him in the team.
In the
summer, with Flint going...
If you look at it that way, then
was not fast at all. But anyway, I mean, we'll sort of move on. I mean, it's a great result for Town. I mean, earlier this week on the site, sort of inspired by the prospect of Flint returning, we asked what would be your reaction when former players return, whether it be sort of boo or ignore. The results are in. Big results. Only those people who said that they only boo those who leave under a cloud was a majority, 76%. 12% said they couldn't give a shit about any of them. 10% say they give open arms to all former Town players, and 1% say they will launch a tirade of abuse at any Swindon player. on the site, Steve Nash said, in Flint's case, we boo him to affect his game. Not really sure how much it worked yesterday. We know he's a hothead with the crowd on his back, and and our silky skills, with them, he's bound to lose it. It didn't work yesterday. It was good to see from Flint at the end of the game, walked over to the Town end and gave him a good sort of, good clap.
I think he learned from Charlie Austin, who did that, when he was with Burnley. Last year, and when most of the time they do that, fans are kind of,
I think a few people were like that, and I think the key thing there is players that leave under a cloud, and I think with Flint's case, it was the fact he said, this is my better chance of getting into the Championship, which is bound to get everyone's backs up while he left. And it's the same with Austin. When he left, he kind of sort of said, I want to get a bit bit further, and I can't fill my ambition with Swindon. If you compare that to two other great strikers like Parkin and also Simon Cox, they knew they were going to get sold, they knew they were going to go somewhere better, so all they did was they acted with complete dignity, and they were just said how much they loved their time here, but they were sad to leave, and all that sort of stuff. And that's why Parkin and Cox will always be, will never be booed, and would always be really, and always thought of very hard fondly, compared to Aidan Flint, who did that and made that sentence, and Austin said something quite similar, and so I think that's why people do get booed rather than other players that just don't.
I'm trying to sort of think over the years which ones have got the worst.
That's obvious one, but it's kind of a different sort of circumstance in a way, because he shouldn't have really joined us first place. I'm trying to think.
You're probably right. I remember Bobby Barnes coming back and getting sent off. I'm showing my age a bit now, but
Davis.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
because he went off to Luton. Great career move for him.
Absolutely,
When he came back in return, he got sent off as well on that day.
Good player though, Sol Davis.
Hard one.
He was out of all the Swindon players and left backs and things I've seen over the years, he was one of the better ones.
But a lot of players won't agree. Michael Welsh, Paul Vale, and he double break his leg, and he never played again or something. I think.
But I'm trying to think of, I guess Calderwood would be one of the ones that when he came back would have got one of the best receptions. I remember being at when we went to the Tottenham in the Premier League, and then Calderwood came over to the Swindon fans at the start, and the Tottenham fans were almost looking in surprise at the reception that he got, because the whole end just stood up for him and applauded him. That's the kind of the biggest, best return I can see. We haven't got that many. Simon Ferrier get a lovely
he would do. I mean, perhaps it's a more sort of recent, sort of last 10 years or so thing in terms of the media and players being more outspoken because they can tweet or they do whatever themselves, so they're perhaps more honest in interviews.
Everything is more extreme.
They're more honest. You know, if they don't want to go and they want to try and engineer their exit, then that's what they do now.
I think especially in Cox's case, that he came, when Simon Cox came in, he said from the start that this was where he wanted to come in, play, score those goals, step and stuff.
But we realise that, you know, we'd love to be in the Premier League. But, you know, if we can have that duel for 2 years, see him scored 30 goals.
But you take that for granted. Some fans don't see that. Yeah. There are fans out there, you know, I was in...
I'm just too realistic, that's my problem.
When I was in the Brentford game, I went to the Winners' Lounge to watch the playoff, and there were some really... I mean, I'm not saying my opinion is right, it's just exactly, it's my opinion, but there were some opinions in there of certain players and the manager, and it kind of really sort of shook me how aggressive and how horrible it was. And it's just, you know, people are different, you know. People brought up different, and, you know, I'm not saying I'm better than anyone else or anything like that, but it scares me.
I've had to tone you down with your normal foul-mouthed tirades.
This is take four of the podcast.
This is very much.
So,
I thought it was funny that Marlon Pack got a lot of abuse from certain sections of the fans when he went over to take a corner.
He smiled.
It's not his fault. It's our financial...
I remember his tweet saying that he was really gutted that he didn't join Swindon, because obviously it was a team... He wanted to work under Di Canio. He wanted to... You know, he thought we had a good chance of getting up, and obviously it was a good move geographically for him as well.
But
he did get booed.
Somewhere in the archive, there's a BBC interview with him talking about the move, you know, that it's all done, and
I mean, it was, and it's just, you know, a couple of days, they were kind of all held on to it, and then suddenly it was all... No, seriously, it was all off.
But I wonder what money he would have been on compared to Kassim. I mean, obviously it might change now, but if you look at what we've got, there'd be a lot of
his agent would have got about £1 million probably as well. But anyway, so we move on, funny enough, to Paolo Di Canio.
Okay.
And his Sunderland team were beaten 3-0 at West Brom yesterday.
Yeah.
They've got 1 point.
There's that Geordie guy.
Not
Geordie guy, sorry. No, Sunderland isn't. It's Mackham's.
Mackham's,
we're just sort of pointing at Di Canio. One point.
At the end of the game, Di Canio was, you know, just stood there, solitary figure on the pitch, trying to empathize the way that Di Canio can.
But the
thing is, I mean, watching it on the telly and various highlights, you know, people, and listening to 606. People going, you know, why is he doing this? Seriously, have you missed that he did this at Swindon all the time?
I've never seen stuff like this before. We can show you every game or what it is. It was like, for me, it was like watching an ex-girlfriend having an argument with their boyfriend. It was kind of like, oh, I've been there. It'd be all right.
But I think you'll find that today a lot of the papers will all be talking about Di Canio's antics and not the shocking performance of his team. Whether that's his aim, whether he's clever.
He has said that before at Swindon, that his purpose for everything is that he is the manager. It's all to deflect attention on him, take it away from his players. And to be honest, I do agree. I mean, the manager is there as the figurehead. They've got to take, you know, they are the person who gets sacked at the end of it. Players on their nice...
Then his argument falls down because then he's slacking off the players the previous week. So I just think he wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to do this today. And it's kind of, I just breathe a sigh of relief financially and emotionally. I think we all got so drawn in. It's really bizarre being a Swindon fan at the moment, because I know for a fact that the media outlets, whether it's the Advo and the BBC, they're kind of like, not struggling for news, but it's kind of, they're so foreign to them.
We're seriously struggling for news at the moment. I mean, Brendan had to put his press watch sort of feature in a cupboard because we actually haven't got anything to talk about.
I might do a Derby Day special.
Yeah,
for a second, for basically
because we were going to do something on Mark Cooper's appointment. There, you know, when he's finally confirmed a special press watch, but literally we couldn't actually report it.
It's
because,
just
you know, when De Canio's here, we're reporting about news in, you know, Sweden being reporting Saudi Arabia and South America, the Mars everywhere,
and then editing to get it all down into an article. But now, yeah, it's not the same. But so I kind of prefer it.
Yeah, it's just a lot emotionally. It's a lot more healthy to be a Swindon fan at the moment, and it's nice to be able to talk about the football. And and we did before, but it'd be revolved around one man, and emotionally, I just don't think it was good for the majority of people in this town. And we got too close, and I think the amount of people who probably look at the Twitter and Facebook and things like that has changed. It would be interesting if you did like a statistic and see how much people spend time looking at stuff online as a Swindon fan. I bet it's changed massively. People on forums are now just trying to make arguments out of nothing at the moment because there's not really much going on, so they just start something for...
Well, particularly with town playing a better quality of football than what we did under De Canio.
Yes.
I'd rather watch this any day than
also,
then.
Also, I thought after the MK Dons game, what I used to find quite exhausting, which is obviously what Sunderland fans are finding, is that De Canio will not hold back in pointing the finger at players. Now, when Mark Cooper was interviewed after the MK Dons game, obviously Byrne got sent off. One of those questionable things, as we've discussed before, whether it was a red card or not. Now, I have no doubt that if Paolo De Canio was still in charge, on that interview on the TV, he would have hung Byrne out to dry, and he would have said that was a stupid thing. He's let his team down, and he would have publicly hammered Byrne, youth team on Monday morning.
As a scapegoat for potential...
Whereas Cooper, it didn't matter if he thought it was a red card. He was going to defend him to the hilt, and that's what I felt, that, you know, he basically said it was never a sending off, the guy's not like that, and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, well, there you go. He's immediately backing his player
it shouldn't have been sent off anyway.
Yeah, even if he thought he had been sent off, he was going to back his player, and he was going to be behind his team. Whereas I don't think with De Canio he would have got that. And I think Sunderland fans and also the Sunderland players are now thinking to themselves, well, you know, if I make the slightest mistake, I'm going to be in the youth team next week.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, 5 games in for them, it's not very long, but the Premier League, you don't get much time, do you really? So that's the problem there.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking about Premier League, I mean, we get the visit of Chelsea on Tuesday night. Chelsea. I mean, we haven't played them since 1994, have we, probably?
I guess that's
probably
the last
game.
Everyone talks about the Simord Cup.
So that would have been sort of 87, 88.
They did talk about it on the radio. I can't remember, but they're getting Tim Parkin in, aren't they? He was... played in that game as the co-commentator, I think.
He's now a police officer.
Scout.
For West Brom. That's it. That's right.
Well, Chelsea had a 2-0 win over Fulham last night, which was their sort of ended a poor run of form. A poor run being 2 defeats.
And top of the table.
Top of the table. Yeah. So the Champions League defeat when they probably still will make it through to the knockout stages. I mean, third round of Capital Cup this time. Last year it was Burnley, wasn't it, in the same round?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The key question for all of us is what sort of team will Chelsea bring? I mean, even if they're going to, you know, they've got a team of stars, a bench full of stars. You know, we might end up with some bloke called Eto playing. Yeah. You know, he's past it, isn't he?
I
saw a great tweet. I can't remember if it was who it was retweeted by, but I thought it was really funny. It said, Torres coming on for Eto. He goes, oh wow, it used to be Mark Steen for poor Furlong. And I thought, things aren't that bad. And I thought, yeah, that's how far they've come.
Brilliant.
They had a... So far, Marino's not been afraid to actually make some changes in their team. He's actually trying to sort of find out who he can work with. Mm. A bit like kind of De Canio, really. They've got some good players, particularly Mata, who's fallen out of favour. But I mean, Brendan, you had a look at who could be playing this week.
I think because I was chatting with my dad about it, and immediately everyone's gone down the route that they'll play their reserves, their youth team, and stuff like that. There, but as we said, you know, you look at the team, you look at who didn't actually get involved in Saturday's game against Fulham, and there's, you know, a whole load of names. I mean, as we said before, you could have Demba Ba and Fernando Torres up front.
Well, I wouldn't take that. I'd rather have not a Ranger, but
yeah. Yeah, they could have them up front, and you've obviously got Juan Mata. You've got Frank Lampard, who only came on for a little bit on Saturday, may get a run out.
He's too old now, isn't he?
Yeah, you've got William.
I can see where you go with this, Ron.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to, you know, I think we're going to win. So
absolutely,
absolutely.
I think, you know, there's an awful lot of talent that can be dismissed as reserve players. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are one or two names that perhaps we do not know from the Chelsea
team. You've forgotten the final bit. Reserve players on £70,000 a week.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. So, you know, are they going to fancy it in a cold night?
It's just going to be a bizarre, great experience. If we get... Because it's going to be the sort of game, if we're getting beat 5-0 and we score, everyone's going to cheer.
Well, that's what a lot of people say to me so far. They think 5-1 is probably...
I think it'd be close as long
as Swindon come out of it with a goal.
I think if they can, if Swindon will get a chance, and I think if they take their chances, I think they will score at least one, maybe even more. It just depends on whether Chelsea are up for it.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. Whether they've sent, because remember there's a couple of connections. Eddie Vivash is there. Is the team reserve team manager?
Really?
I think, yeah.
All
And there's also a kid I used to play with when I was. We were talking Ferndale around the corner. This kid called Jimmy Fraser, who used to be the youth development officer here, who's now been at Chelsea for years. So there's connections there, and it wouldn't be surprised if they did some homework on us, because they have to, you know.
They're not play football, I think, on the day,
and that's the best thing. It's just a shame that it looks Mason is going to miss out, because I think he would shine. In this game, but with Pritchard back, he will cause anyone problems.
He will,
I mean, it all depends. For Pritchard, though,
I would think it would be a Josie or Nguessian will be one of the ones to drop, just simply because the Ranger especially is going to be run ragged by the end of 75 minutes, so they're going to need a fresh big forward to go up there.
So basically, Nguessian would be.
I think that's what I'd say. Someone fresh and big. If you have him on from the start, you're kind of giving it all away after the first minute. Okay. So that's what I would probably say.
Okay.
I'll probably be taking Mark Cooper's listen to this.
And I mean, you know, even if Chelsea bring their youngsters, they've got some good players like Kevin De Bruyne, Ryan Bertrand could be playing.
Sancho Bob at the back.
Luis, he could be there as well. I was looking through the list of... youth team or under 21 team players at Chelsea, and they've got a great one called Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Wow.
17-year-old box to box midfielder, and I think, well, he's played for the wrong club, QPR, shouldn't it, with a name like Loftus, but what a great name, Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, great, isn't it?
Great.
We'd like to see him play now. Get that on the back of your shirt.
Yeah.
But,
that's a bit of money.
Could be the name of the new QPR stadium if you called it Sheik.
Yeah,
You'd like that, wouldn't you, Fernandes? But no, it'll be an interesting game to see.
I think everyone should just enjoy it. I hope if people start getting them on the players' backs, if they start, why aren't you picking him up? Why? But you just can't.
It's going to be the silly mistakes. I mean, that's going to be, you know, like whether it's just going to be like a, you know, corner that goes in, he isn't marked, and you know.
Well, you could argue that there will be no mistakes at all, and it would just be Chelsea would just pick the ball up, do an amazing move, and you know, you're 3-0 down in half an hour. You just don't know how it goes. But Chelsea last year. I think they drew. I think they had a draw in the cup with someone in League One as well, didn't they? Or was that Everton? Maybe, I'm not sure. But Chelsea, you know, it doesn't work like that a lot of the time. It's kind of they feel it out. You just don't know how it's going to go, and that's what I like about it.
A bit of a team in transition at the moment. Again, as they always seem to be in a state of flux with the managerial changes and Mourinho trying to work out who he can kind of.
Abide by his
team.
Cooper said, he said, we're not gonna align at the back. We're gonna go forward.
Yeah.
Why not?
But as you said earlier, you can do against a team like Chelsea, a team that turns up, because they're going to give you space as well to play, because they're not going to come and sit back and defend.
Yeah, and how great for the young kids to go see all these players. I still remember being when we were in the Premier League and when Man United came down. It was such a bizarre experience seeing all these players on the pitch and us battling and getting a draw out of it. I just don't think everyone should just sort of sing their hearts out and just have fun with it.
Yeah,
that's great. Okay, well, a really good note to end on there. Well, that's all that we got time for this week on the podcast. So massive thanks to Brendan and to Matt for joining me.
No worries.
So speak to you all in a fortnight. Cheers.